kick off hour number two. It's brought to you by the Knoxville TVA Employees Credit Union. Check them out online at tvacreditunion.com and become a member. You know they're excited. Big Vol fans over there.
Huge. And,
helping out their members for almost 90 years now. There's over 30 branches right here in East Tennessee. So hit them up in person or go to tvacreditunion.com for all the info.
Shouts out to Roberto. Already got land in a tailgate spot.
There you go. Boom.
One of many that he could probably.
Oh, yeah. Bounce around.
We've got some other listeners with tailgate spots. We'll see if they're nice enough to join Roberto. So if you want to tailgate hop, you can, Landon.
Hickman
I mean, think about that. That's the kind of game this is, by the way. That somebody who cannot find anyone to come with him
has no ticket.
Is going to drive without a ticket, probably can't get a ticket once he gets here,
right?
But wants to come to just see it outside the stadium, just to see the environment, to see game day, the Vol Walk, the Vol Navy. I got to drive by the river today and see if I'm sure they're already starting to load up down there.
I drove
by Monday. There was one boat. Might have been a stationary. I don't know. Maybe he never leaves.
They'll be rolling in.
But I'd say today and tomorrow, if you're going to be boating downtown, don't. Because this is when there's one yacht that parks at the row house that is ridiculous. Like a full staff yacht.
Saw the
from some
game
island
day
in the Bahamas or something. You saw the game day bus?
Yep.
I saw the CBS bus. I got a picture. A buddy took a picture of it. It was at Watt Road filling up.
Game day is the game day crew, I guess, is staying off the Cedar Bluff exit.
Well, there's a lot of options there.
Yes, there are.
Got the check.
I feel like I could give the exact location because, I mean, you can't hide a damn bus like that, but, you know.
You asked if, hang on, before we get back to your question, is this going to be the final, this is it, right? The final Florida-Tennessee CBS game.
For
at least with this.
For the next 15 years, yeah. You will not hear, it's Tennessee and Florida.
It's kind of sad.
This is the 52nd matchup between the two teams, right? I think Florida leads all time 31-20.
Okay.
Which is pretty incredible considering they've won 16 on the last 17. Can we start our own streak this weekend?
These are inflection points, you know, when there are coaching changes.
TG Vol says, I was at Vol calls last night, probably 20 yachts or better rolling in on the docks.
Wow. I mean, it's like these are the chances. That's been the weirdest thing about the series lately. For Tennessee, is that even when Florida's had issues, they've been able to kind of find ways to win for the most part. Obviously, Butch got a was that was McElwain, right? The one time. But like these are those moments where, you know, they're a year behind, and even though their roster might say on paper it's more talented, the way they've played recently, you can tell that it's a you know, they're kind of scuttling a little bit.
This is the last one on SEC. Yep.
So it'll be
ABC starting 2024, late afternoon games.
That's crazy.
I felt like there was some.
And today is actually the 21st anniversary of the first episode of SEC on CBS. September 22nd, 2001 was the first.
Are there no CBS afternoon games next year? I felt like there was some weird thing about.
It says the worldwide leader begins broadcasting late afternoon SEC games in 2024.
I think CBS has some next year.
They do. It's a weird, yes.
And then ABC's picking them up at some point in the season. And then in 2025, like, there will be no.
Yeah. So I guess it's possible that next year we get it, but I don't know how that's going to work out. Because those
definitely
two
last one at Neyland Stadium.
Yep. Yeah. Good point. Good point.
So, I mean, I would have sent, I mean, do they do. I guess CBS still does the intro, right? Like a real intro. I feel like ESPN, because all their games are so back to back to back, and they're always running behind.
Mm-hmm.
If they do have an intro, a lot of times you miss it because it starts on some alternate channel, so they're not going to put a lot of.
No, they probably don't even. They definitely don't put as much work into it as CBS used to.
Oh yeah.
So,
I mean, I was down for
that James White Fort one. That one's pretty good. The next one in 2003, or yeah, 2003 is just kind of like, oh, okay.
I still remember a Notre Dame Florida State number one versus number two intro that, you know, I think that was in like the ABC 330 game. It was just such, like, everyone was talking about that game. You know, I was mm-hmm. a kid, but it was like, or I guess it would have been on NBC Sports, but I mean, everybody, it was Charlie Ward,
yeah,
you know, Florida State, Notre Dame at, you know, in South Bend. And when you watch it now, it's like, God, this is so corny.
But right,
but in the moment, you're like, oh, yeah, football, one versus two, you know, loser, out, you know.
No, I mean, even watching that one, like, it's kind of corny.
It is
but
corny.
It's, but it's kind of cool, too.
Yeah, yeah.
On the banks of the Tennessee River.
I was down there for, I was down in Gainesville for a Florida LSU game one time, and we were like, going to play, going to go play golf on, like, Friday. And there, we saw that. I think it was ESPN. I don't know who it was, whoever's doing the game. There was a truck out by, I think it was on, it was near campus at one of their little pond lake things. But the truck was out there, and like, what are they doing out here? They were
filming a
gator. Yeah, the live
gator.
No, for the intro.
I don't remember what year that was. Was that 97? What year did you say you were down there or saw the truck?
No, this was LSU Florida, like,
oh, okay.
A must-champ year.
I do remember, yeah.
I filled in for my buddy, the LSU fan, who couldn't go to the game.
There was one intro when we were playing at the Swamp, I don't remember the year, where it was like a wide shot of one of the, yeah, like mm-hmm. one of those ponds around campus or, mm-hmm. you know, in Gainesville. And it was way, like a shot from above and kind of far away. And as they zoomed in right on the head of a gator, you know, swimming around in there or whatever. I remember thinking, like, oh, God, they're everywhere. It's so scary. I was a little kid. I was like 10.
Gators. What 10-year-old scared of an alligator?
Are you an idiot?
I mean, they're relatively harmless.
Relatively harmless.
It's an alligator. Just don't mess with it.
Well, yeah, but when you're 10, it's like, whoa, well, those are scary. It's like a dinosaur.
It's like the same thing as seeing a bear. It's just... don't mess with it.
Oh, yeah. It was at, like, there is the gator pond on campus, so where they have...
No, that's probably like,
the gators are in there.
See, they are everywhere. They have an entire pond dedicated to them, Hickman.
I kind of wish we had one on...
a gator pond here?
I mean, not just like gators.
We have a whole river with all the stuff that lives here.
And people swear they see them sometimes.
Alligators are not naturally aggressive, despite them being meat eaters.
But they got all them teeth and no toothbrush.
Unless they are starving, it is unlikely that a gator will display aggressive behavior towards humans. However, they can be pretty rough when provoked and can attack a person without warning.
Medulla oblongata.
Oh.
No. Magical rays of sunshine that come down when you're feeling blue.
Did you say the medulla oblongata?
Yes. Have you seen Waterboy?
No. No.
What?
No.
You haven't seen Waterboy?
No.
Dude, whoa.
There's a good gator aspect of Happy Gilmore, too.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Damn, I'll get a bit my hand.
Okay, Hickman, listen, and I'm not kidding. I know you hate sports movies. You have to watch The Waterboy. I went and saw that with my dad. I can't remember how old. I mean, we saw it in the theater, so it was right when it came out. That was like my favorite movie ever when it first came out. It was hilarious.
Who's in that one?
Adam Sandler. Oh, yeah. Oh my God. I can't believe you haven't seen that.
I'll add it to the list.
Didn't you tweet out a picture of that, like him, The Waterboy, this week? Like chasing a quarterback or something.
I don't know. It might not have been me. But it might have been somebody after Pitt and I retweeted it. But yeah, I can't. Dude, it's like every big hit you've ever wanted to see in football, but it's all condensed into one movie. And it's really funny. It's good.
I'll check it out.
It's got Jerry Reed. You know who Jerry Reed is?
Yeah.
Who is he?
He's a comedian.
Joe Montana.
He's a musician and kind of a comedian and an actor. You know the song Eastbound and Down?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he sang that. He was Snowman and Smokey and the Bandit.
See,
have you seen Smokey and the Bandit?
Oh, dude, that's one of my favorites.
Okay,
ever.
If you like Smokey and the Bandit, you'll like Waterboy. They're nothing alike, except that Burt Reynolds loves football. Jerry Reed loves football. Jerry Reed lived in Sparta, Tennessee. You know who he rooted for, Nate?
The Vols.
No, he's a big Florida fan. He'd go fishing with Bill Dance.
See, I knew Jerry Reed was in Smokey and the Bandit, and he was a singer, but I had no idea he would be associated with that movie, so I was kind of assuming different Jerry Reed.
No, he was the coach of the rival team in the Waterboy.
Speaking of the medulla oblongata, I will give one of you fellas $5 without Googling it if you can tell me where that's located.
The brain.
Yeah, but like specifically where, because it's kind of popular for being in a specific location of the brain.
The top of the spine, where it enters the brain. I don't know. Where?
It's where the brain meets the spinal cord.
Is it really?
Yeah.
You got $5.
$5, baby! You're so mad that I got that right, aren't you? You're so mad. Look at him. He's like...
You owe him like 3 lunches, so he's still way ahead.
Yeah.
Not 2.5 now, big boy. Congratulations, Chris. Isn't that what you're supposed to say when I get stuff right?
You guys want to hit a break?
Yeah, we can hit a break. I want my $5.
Josh Heupel was asked about other people stepping up with Cedric Tillman possibly out. I'll tell you what he said in that response. About the only interesting thing that happened on Volcals last night. We'll also get back to Hickman's question of, are you more nervous when you're at the game or at home getting set to watch?
They say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound.
Hour two continues.
Get your foot on the pedal. Son, never mind them brakes. Let it all hang out, because we got a run to make.
This segment brought to you by Maloney Casa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles. Check them all out at KnoxvilleSmiles.com for a virtual tour. Take care of your teeth in 2022 with Maloney Casa Dentistry at Knoxville Smiles. Easy to get to, Cedar Bluff area. Convenient. Take great care of you. Heard from a lot of listeners that have started going there for all their dental needs. They can do it all. Cleanings, restorative work, all that stuff. They got you covered. KnoxvilleSmiles.com for a virtual tour. Tell them you heard about them right here on Fan Run Radio. Heupel was asked, with Tillman being questionable, how important is it for other receivers to be ready to step up? And I was hoping for a split second he'd give us some little lean. This is what he said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll find out more. Sorry, we'll find more out about said and the other guys that were nicked up from last week as we finish the week out. I think it's important that the guys that have seen action have played really well. We've got a lot of confidence in those guys, and it's true at a lot of positions. But if they're in there, we don't change what we do and how we call it. Hendon's got great trust in those guys. They're going to have to do a great job of winning one-on-one battles in this football game.
One-on-one battles.
It does make me a little... that he is asked a question specifically about Tillman and loops in other guys that were nicked up last week. That means those weren't just minor little things, right? I mean, this is a thing. Like, this is something that's on his mind.
Or he's trying to plant the seed that it's something so that Florida's playing the who we gonna see game in the Tennessee game.
Also possible.
I feel like Jabari could have come back in. They were just keeping him fresh. Not sure what happened to Dylan Sampson. I didn't see that in real time, but I did see a video of him getting – he was walking off the field with a couple folks. The good news is we're healthy on defense, we think.
Well, I mean, we're definitely not
– yeah.
Like some of these other – I mean, there are teams that have had a high number of significant injuries already. Definitely not in that position, especially not on defense. So running back, will be the biggest question mark. I think everybody has a decent feel for where the Tillman situation is. I mean, I don't think there's any possible way he's 100%. I would say it's improbable that he comes out and is close to 100%. If he does play, it's going to be limited. And I'd say there's a good chance he doesn't play at all.
It's not very positive.
But we've got other receivers. They're ready to step up. We're not changing how we call it, according to Josh Heupel.
So whoever takes his spot, we're going to just lob it to him 16 times?
Maybe. That's what the matchup calls for, I guess. Got to win the one-on-one battle.
Who's the next man in? Is it Keaton?
It's Ramel Keaton in his spot if you just go by kind of the but now that there's more time to kind of make an adjustment there, it's not like in the middle of a game where a guy gets hurt and the next guy just goes in, you know?
True, yeah. You got time to kind of prep somebody for an extended workload this week.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about the defense in this one? Seems like their weakness is going to be going against our weakness, and their strength is going to be going against our strength, at least defensively.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we make plays defensively? Can we keep them behind schedule? And can we force them into third and six, seven, eight, nine plus?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the goal. I think that's the key chess match, is how much do you run blitz Florida on early downs? Because it is risky to send a guy, you know, more aggressively at the line of scrimmage, because mm-hmm. if they run the other way or if he gets chipped and that opens a hole, obviously there's nothing in behind if they get into the second level where that linebacker would have been. I mm-hmm. mean, what Kentucky did a lot was they'd bring one extra guy off the corner, and they were trying to pick a certain corner depending on where the back was aligned in relation to Anthony Richardson. So a couple times, and I only really looked for this in the first quarter, so they may have done some different things later, but a couple times they would bring the extra man off the non-running back side
mm-hmm.
so that if it's a handoff to the back, he's running right into that extra guy on the edge.
Yeah.
You know,
and then if Richardson keeps, you got a guy in full chase, full speed chase right there.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, so it, you know, do we think we can just line up straight up and hold them for 2 yards or less on run plays on first and second down? If you can, then you do that. But if not, then, you know, maybe you do some alignment things. You try and walk a safety down late in the box to fill that hole, and then you bring a linebacker more aggressively at the line of scrimmage as a run blitz.
Do you risk that early and just say, like, I'm thinking in my head, right? Like, we think they're going to come out and try to run the football. I think everybody would agree. Like, that's what they're going to try to do. That's been their bread and butter. Do you take a couple risks early and say, we're going to give you one-on-one on the outside? If you can hit a deep shot, good for you, but we're gonna send some people from the secondary. We're going to take Flowers and send him, or McCullough and send him, along with a linebacker. We're going to try to overload you in the run game and force Richardson in maybe a play-action situation or even a called shot against a run blitz situation, and hope our pressure either gets there or that he's just inaccurate with the football.
I mean, what I would do is I would walk a safety down. I would try and bring a safety down late. That way you've got the numbers in the box. But I would not be putting guys on islands. I would have – when I walk that safety down, I would be in a cover three look. That way, my corners are not going to give up just a bomb down. I mean, they could, but they're going to be in the best position to defend.
Right, right.
Just oh, crap, they're blitzing. I'm just going to throw this ball deep and hope for the best. They're going to be in the best possible spot to defend that ball. And then I would have my, you know, linebackers just work really hard inside out. And so if that's my plan, then the way Billy Napier has to beat me early with that is he has to think, you know, they're probably going to try and stuff our run, but they're not going to take too many chances. So I'm going to throw some of these constraint screens to the outside mm-hmm. against this soft bubble
right.
on the outside, push those corners back and get some stuff. So, you know, like a curl flat type of concept or run the outside receiver on a go and then just throw the out route. But for me, I want Richardson to have to make that throw.
I don't
have to throw a 10-yard out. You know, let's make him even throw some stuff to the outside and have to put it where the guy can catch and run. All, you know, if it's mm-hmm. a little behind the guy, we come up and tackle for a 2-yard gain. I'm fine with that. But I don't want them to be able to start the game and rip off 6, 8, 10-yard runs over and over because we're just sitting in kind of zone defense, not wanting to force Richardson to have to fit into windows. But we can't stop the run because we're playing too conservative with our safeties back. So let's roll a guy down there. Let's stuff it, and let's show him you're not going to run the football on us. But let's not get beat, you know, deep. Now, that's where, but cover three, that's where they're, you're susceptible to that little skinny seam pass, too. So you got to make sure that you're getting underneath that at least early in the route. So that ball has to go up and over, and then your safety and your corner has time to close.
If you can force him to have to try to put touch on passes, I think you've got a chance to get some.
I also love,
he's not good at that.
I also love going cover three like that and then bringing those run blitzes off the same side and pushing him all to one side. And when that happens, your safety in the middle of the field can basically, instead of having to play middle third, can almost play the half the field he's running to.
Mm-hmm.
And your backside corner can essentially, as long as the guy doesn't immediately come across the field that he's on, he can essentially stay on him man-to-man on the backside.
Yeah.
As long as your linebackers know that and they can leak with anybody trying to trail out with any type of throwback or anything like that.
Throwback. Don't like the thought.
There's going to be a lot of boots. That's what I've noticed watching them early. A lot of pistol, like hold the ball out, you know, a zone blocking, not a zone read, but a zone blocking scheme. Pistol, take the snap, hold the ball out, running back either takes it or it's a different version of the old stretch that Peyton Manning would do with Edgerrin James, where he'd take the snap and he'd try and run way out.
Sprint out there, yeah.
Try and make it always look the same. Last second, pull it back, boot, and be ready to throw, you know, to the backside. So everybody's flowing one way. And then you got the flood guys coming out the backside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Obviously, that puts Richardson on the corner or the run-pass option. I mean, a lot of that. I mean, really important that our ends set the edge correctly, can keep good leverage. I mean, that's what Heupel's talking about with keeping them in the pocket.
I'll be very interested to see what Banks does here.
Yeah, Tim Banks.
Yeah, Tim Banks. You know, how creative can he get behind whatever he sends is going to be pretty important. Because I think it's like any quarterback. You keep showing him the same thing over and over. Eventually, not only he, but the coordinators will dial something up that they could probably hit. But if Banks can keep it multiple,
right,
but still kind of, at least in the front look, right? Like the same concept as far as who you're sending at the quarterback and then mix it up on the backside. I mean, we've seen the guy. Like he could be staring right at a defender and somehow still throw him the football. So Tim Banks.
He did it against South Florida.
I still can't. That was one of the worst interceptions I've ever seen. You know the one we're talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Where he kind of boots out a little bit to the right and then he's just shifting his feet. And then he hops to the right, lands on his right foot, and then just throws it right to that linebacker who had worked outside and then is coming back in. Just an unbelievable,
his first
mindless.
Was like into triple coverage. He was just sitting in the pocket. They were going to rush four. He threw it right to South Florida.
I mean, that's what Kentucky did. They tried to kind of run blitz early, get guys near the line of scrimmage on first down. And then once they got them in second, third, and long, they just sit in zone and be like, "All right, now you got to make a throw." And they went right down the field early in the game. They were up 14 to whatever, or they got down 7-3, and they were up. Maybe I have that backwards. Because 14 when they got the safety, they went up 16 to 10.
Oh, against
maybe,
Kentucky.
Against Kentucky.
Yeah.
And then they just could not. It's like he just. You know, it got worse and worse. Dan Mullen talked about Anthony Richardson yesterday. Get into that on the flip side. We'll come back with more. Get to the Big Orange Philly phone lines as well. 865-546-8200. Stick with us right here on 3 and Out. The Fan Run radio live stream is powered by Linderman Sports Medicine in Memphis. Visit LindermanSportsMedicine.com to find out why people are coming from all over Tennessee and beyond to get back in the game of life with Linderman Sports Medicine. If you're not active right now because of discomfort or pain that's limiting any of your activities, check out the amazing work being done by Dr. Laura Linderman. Linderman, big Fan Run fan. And, obviously, Linderman Sports Medicine is making sure you can get back the active lifestyle many times without surgery. So check them out online at LindermanSportsMedicine.com. Back to the Big Orange Philly phone lines. We got Jay up next. What's up, Jay? You're on 3 and Out.
Well, Houston, did you give your hot take on uniforms yet?
I did, but then I got some inside information that made it not so much of a hot take. Jay, I thought that Heupel had gone to Danny White and said, we're not wearing the grays because we're going to beat Florida. We're going to stomp their face in, and I want us to be wearing the traditional orange and white. Take those grays, put them away, keep them for next week or something, because we're not doing that this week. It's not going to be a gimmick show. But then I heard the helmets didn't come in time.
Oh, so it was going to be a gimmick show.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. But
well,
they couldn't have done grays if they wanted to, is what I was told.
I'm a traditionalist. I love our colors, and I especially want us wearing our colors when we play our traditional rivals.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me, though. You know, I mean, obviously, would I take a win over Florida in gray uniforms? Of course I would. But I don't know, man. I just like – I don't want to look back and – every time we beat Florida, we have to wear gray uniforms, and it just feels like we're the girl that cares more about the relationship than the guy does, or vice versa, because we're the ones that get all up and wear our special uniforms, but they don't ever do that for us.
Like, well, they weren't special uniforms in 2016.
They wore their like gator whites or whatever with the white helmet in 2016.
Clean uniform.
But I think that's all it was. I think it was just the helmet that was different.
Yeah,
so they just wore different helmets. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd like somebody to wear a special uniform for us, man, and make me feel important. Mm.
What did Kentucky wear black last year? No, they didn't. Did they?
I think they were chrome.
That's right. They wore the chrome helmet. Of course, Kentucky's going to wear that for us. But you know,
yeah, that's what I think. That's kind of Jay's point, right?
I mean, I don't know. We wore black for South Carolina. I don't think that was us showing South Carolina utmost respect or anything.
That was a little different. I kind of like that. You know, kind of the middle game. I like wearing the special uniforms in mid-tier games.
I do too.
It is kind of weird. Sometimes Jay, when you know the Juwan Jennings clip goes around and around and around, where he just roasts T's Tabor. The gray does kind of catch me a little bit. Like, it's not a bad thing. It's like, oh yeah, there's that game. It kind of helps me remember, but it would be kind of cool if we're just in our
do remember the first time they wore them against Georgia, and I went to the stadium. I was sitting in the press box, and you just look out as they're warming up, and I was like, that does not look like Tennessee
out there.
Yeah, and if you do it every now and then, fine, but I don't want to make it a tradition that we wear gray uniforms at home against Florida. You know, I like to see the orange and white against Florida.
I agree with that. I agree with that.
I like to, you know, let's not make that an every year thing. But, guys, do y'all, you know, I think it's remarkable. 18 months ago, Barrett Solis tweeting out that we're not going to get to a bowl game for another 6 years. I mean, it's, you know, Tennessee's a nuclear wasteland of a program when Heupel takes over, and now we're looking at possibly going 4-0 and being a top 10 team going into the bye week. And I think it's remarkable how well Heupel has made us forget the number of deficiencies that are still on this roster and how much help this roster still needs. And I just, he's just done a great job. And I don't know. What do y'all think? Is Heupel a top 10 offensive mind in the country? Is this guy top 10 in the country in terms of just
Absolutely.
What you would consider an offensive mind play caller?
Yes. I think he's top 10.
Probably top 5.
Sure.
He's at least top 10. I'd have to go through. I mean, if we're talking like Power 5 only, then I don't think there's a question. There may be some guys that, you know.
Like, I mean, just look at what he did to our offense.
No, I know, yeah. And, I mean, he did it at Missouri, too.
He did it in our first year.
Did it at UCF, too. So, I mean, he's done it at, you know, big enough levels of college football where you say, yeah. And it's funny, too, because as Nate's mentioned, and it's 100% accurate, like, this is not a difficult playbook. It's not like he's out there with the John Gruden vernacular with, like, ZX fade 26, Y shift B, you know, like, it's nothing like that. They just – and I think what makes it more impressive, Jay, is the speed in which they call it. The speed in which, I mean, obviously, like, the plays themselves are good, but to do that and execute it at this pace and this tempo and call the next play as fast as they do and to have as much success as they do, like, that's really impressive. Because there's something to it, like, with the speed and tempo, you're not giving the defenses a lot of chance to sub or adjust or, you know, call exotic blitzes or audibles or anything like that. But you still have to be able to do it really, really fast. Otherwise, it doesn't work. So the speed that one play ends and they've got the next play in and we're still running a play in 18 seconds, it almost seems impossible.
That's what I'm going to be interested to see, Houston. You mentioned the simplicity of the playbook. Now, I mean, Jimbo Fisher has a playbook that's 2 foot thick, and you see what his offense is doing. Mm-hmm. So complexity isn't always better, but I don't know if we're just going to run up and down the higher tier teams in the SEC. And how does that simplicity affect you when you play like a Georgia, an Alabama, if LSU is really elite one year or something, and you can't just run up and down the field on them like you can a Missouri or a Ball State, and your offense looks like a freight train? Does that simplicity become a problem for you? Because I feel like we have about 10 plays we run, and that's pretty much it. And I know that's not the truth, but, you know, I mean, it's just, how does that affect you in beating the elite of the elite teams?
Thanks for the call, Jay.
I think when you get to that level, it's more about players than plays. I mean, that's one of those things, like...
I kind of started at the first part of his call. Like, you do have to continue to beef up this roster.
Yeah, and Heupel said in the offseason, like, we've adjusted and expanded on what we did last year. Like, they have more plays, new plays, different plays. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was interesting. I was, I almost said watching some tweets, but he had videos in it, so I guess that's kind of what I was doing. Austin Burlage put out, you know, just some breakdowns of some plays from the Akron game. The touchdown on the first play of the season to Hyatt, where he stops and they throw that, like, I don't even know what you'd really call it. But anyway, that's the same play that Hyatt scored on for the first touchdown against Akron. It's a wheel route from the slot. And depending on what the secondary does, he stops and sits. Mm-hmm. So against Ball State, he's sitting. Ball comes. He catches it running in towards the middle of the field, cuts it up, and gets in the end zone. They play it differently against Akron, and he just keeps turning it up the sidelines, and we hit him over the top for a touchdown. So it's a lot of – like, that was the same play. But it looks very, very different, and I like that because you're adjusting to what the defense is doing in a specific moment. It's not, we're going to call this play and hope it's the right play. It's, we're going to call this play with this concept, mm-hmm. and depending on how they defend it.
Oh, well, yeah, that's staple air raid stuff.
Yes.
You play the grass. All their four vertical plays typically have break points where you can turn any vert into a stick, into mm-hmm. a hitch. So if they're in cover three and you start running deep and the corner's like still sitting 10 yards off, when you hit 10 yards down the field, you're just going to break back for the football. And the quarterback's got to read it the right way. And less plays means more time to work on that execution.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot like the old school triple option, you can make the defense wrong even when they call a pretty good defense for your play, which is great. You ask about Heupel and the how to like – extrapolate what he's done and then what we're going into here. The big question for me is, can he do it against the better teams? You know, his mm-hmm. best season at Arkansas, what am I talking about? Sorry.
I don't know.
I was reading that they had beaten Arkansas on this schedule I'm looking at here. Mm. His best season calling plays at Missouri, so his SEC year, best season, the second year, you know, they racked up 72 points against Missouri State, 68 against Idaho, 52 against UConn. They did put up 45 on Florida, 50 against Tennessee. Obviously, those weren't very good Florida and Tennessee teams. They put up 45 on Vanderbilt in a big win. They beat Arkansas on the road, 48-45. All these are, you know, really big numbers. But they had some games against the better teams where, you know, they play number 15 Auburn and lose and only score 14 points, get beat 51-14. They only scored 3 against Purdue, 13 against South Carolina. They lost and scored 34 at Kentucky. They scored 28 against Georgia, but gave up 53. So that's the next step, right, is that and maybe that's not his offense. Maybe that's just the defense of mm-hmm. that team, too. That's where the big question mark is going to be as we play better and better teams. As we talked about, who knows if Florida's even one of those better teams. They're definitely a team that has some big guys that can run, but how good are they, and what does that mean moving forward? You know, the bowl game that year, they lost 33-16 to Texas, you know, another team that's not great but has a lot of big dudes that can run. So,
yep.
You know, we'll see. Right now he's kind of doing it with a bunch of kind of 3 and low 4-star type guys as well, which is kind of the best player you get at Missouri.
Right, right.
At Tennessee, if you can win
enough.
Even, yeah, just win enough with this type of schedule. Put a 9-3, 10-2 type of season out there. Then you can get the types of players where you have the same types of dudes that you play against when you play the Georgias and Alabamas, you know, depending on what season it is. So, a lot of interesting stuff. We'll get back to the phone lines on the flip side. Stick with this final segment. Hour two next. Final segment, hour number two. Right back to the Big Orange Philly phone lines. Come in with some Copperhead Road.
I know how much you love it, Nate, so I played it for you.
Thank you, Hickman. We got Matt up next. What's up, Matt? You're on Three and Out.
Why does Copperhead Road just want to make me take shots of whiskey?
Well, you know. Well, it's about that good old Tennessee whiskey, the clear stuff.
Nate, I'm getting real sick and tired of your realistic expectations, bud.
You're not sitting next to him.
Yeah, Brett's ready to kill me.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep it, you know.
You're keeping it a hundy, I know.
I'm the coach, Matt, so I'm the one, you know, that has to manage. I'm the guy where you score the touchdown to go up 14 – with a minute left, they're out of timeouts. And you're like, all right, let's make sure we execute on defense here. I don't want to give up a touchdown and onside's kicking another touchdown this last minute while the stands and the sidelines going berserk because they know we've won the game, you know?
I sure as hell hope Kress isn't Hendon Hooker.
First of all, guys, I'm going to try my best to slow down on this phone call and listen more. I was told yesterday that I talk way too fast on the radio, and what? I ask questions and then answer them for you guys.
Who told you that?
Chad, buddy of mine.
Come on, Chad.
I know, dude. He's a Chad. So, you know, he's off. I said, he don't have the kahunas to ever call in. So,
talk about sausage.
Mm-hmm. Mm, man, I had some this morning, dude. okay. I'll tell you what, fellas. I don't know. I have never been more convinced of something than I am that we're going to get this win Saturday in convincing fashion.
Oh, in convincing fashion.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think it's going to be I think the corners is being turned as it is. And I tell you what kind of aggravates me, Nate, is my cup is off completely. Like, I've tossed it. It's gone. Trash can. I think they picked it up Monday. My trash ran. Waste management, you know?
Yep.
Yours is still next to you on the desk. It's kind of pissing me off, Nate.
What's wrong with that? Why can't you throw your cup in the river and I keep mine on? What's wrong with that? Why do we all have to be the same? I'll tell you why, because you know deep down there's that little last percent point, Matt, where you want to know that if the worst does happen, that at least we all got kicked in the crotch together. That's insecurity. No, and I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Not this year. You've seen Bad Grandpa, right?
Bad Grandpa?
Yeah, or Dirty Grandpa.
Who's it?
You know, with Johnny Knoxville.
Johnny Knoxville.
Bad Grandpa's Knoxville. Dirty Grandpa is Zac Efron and Robert De Niro, which is hilarious, by the way, if you haven't seen it.
Bad Grandpa with Johnny Knoxville. Y'all seen that?
I have not.
No.
Oh God! You got to see it. It's freaking hilarious. But never mind. For anybody out there that's seen it, there's a dance club scene with him in it as a grandpa, and that's what I'm doing right now. That's where I'm at with this whole thing. I'm just letting it ride, man. I am that comfortable and that positive and that confident we're gonna win. But never had that. I have not had that in. I don't know if I had that back in the '90s, man.
Why would it piss you off though that somebody else isn't like you? Because you care that much about me that you want me to enjoy the same amount of
no,
just
no, I
confidence.
No, it hurts me. It
thrill.
Hurts me down deep. I guess it's a better. It hurts me because I feel for you, and I know that I've been there. You just got that. You've been beat down like a dog, man, and you just don't want to let go. You don't want to let the freedom hang.
It's not just
you,
that.
Even yesterday, Nate, I heard you saying specifically that this Florida team was more talented than us. You said that yesterday.
They are on paper. It's not okay. Even close.
No, they're not.
Rankings they're get not. Thrown out the window the second you step on campus. In my mind. Like, you could
it's
be a five-star and go to
point.
A two-star.
I'm not saying it means anything once the game starts, but it's just a data point.
But you know, in your heart of hearts, that this Tennessee football team this year is way better than this Florida. This Florida team has no quarterback, and if Richardson does get hurt, which he sucks, by the way, they have a walk-on coming in. They have nothing.
Yeah, their backup quarterback has been ruled out again for this week with the thumb. However, Matt, starting linebacker Ventrell Miller took reps at practice yesterday, and it looks like he's questionable, which is a slight upgrade from out the week before.
I don't know. Who is that? Has that guy even played?
He played against Utah, was really good, played against Kentucky, got hurt, was out last week, and he's a tackling machine.
I don't know, man. I just feel like I don't think Richardson's got it up in his head. I think he's got some talent running, but I swear I think this stadium is going to be as loud as it was in Oklahoma and as loud as it was for that Cal game, if not louder. I swear I think this is going to be the loudest it's been.
It will be. Whatever the record is for decibels, it'll be broken Saturday. Yeah.
And this guy doesn't have it between the ears to make the audibles, make the right calls. And it's not just him. It's his offensive line. It's the running back. It's the wide receivers. They're gonna be if we do our job. If they had a decent quarterback coming in here that had some skill but also had it between the ears, I'd be worried. But I'm telling you, they don't. This Richardson's not good, and I just don't think it's possible that Napier comes in here and beats Tennessee with just a better team this year. Like, I'm just confident with that. It's almost like I feel like. It's literally to the level of us playing Akron. I feel like that's the confidence I have. I'm not kidding you.
Well, I'm happy for you, and I think we all think Tennessee has a great shot to win. Maybe even a better shot to win than lose. You'll have to tune in tomorrow to find out for our official picks. But I mean,
you sounded very condescending when you just said I'm happy for you.
I mean, I will be just as excited as you, Matt, when it happens.
I know. I'm messing with you on being pissed at you. I'm trying to make a point. You know, I've been there with the – I'm just tired of – I think I'm so tired. Now, dude, I'll be 100% honest, and I know people are thinking it. Like, if we lose the game, dude, I'll be the most heartbroken person out there because I'm that confident. That's a fact. I just am looking at it like I just don't think that's a possibility. I don't know. It's weird this year. It's just something weird this year with this program. I feel it. I don't know.
We'll come back. Thanks for the call, Matt. We'll come back and kick off hour number three, get back to Big Orange Philly phone lines. If you want to weigh in, last call for phone calls, 865-546-8200. Lots to get to. We teased something earlier that I now have even forgotten again, but we'll get back to that. Stick with us right here.
We don't know what it is, but we'll get back to it.
On Three and Out.